British Sky Broadcasting and Universal Pictures present Raising Kane, a Brian De Palma film starring John Lithgow, Lolita Davidovich, Stephen Bauer, Francis Sternhagen, Greg Henry, Tom Bauer and Mel Harris. Also starring Terry Austin, Gabrielle Carteris, Barton Heyman and Amanda Pombo. The words Raising Kane appear in white on a close-up of a black-and-white baby monitor screen. 40-something ginger-haired Carter is tucking his young daughter Amy into bed on the screen. He is speaking to her and tapping two fingers gently on the young girl's chest. She is holding a cuddly toy. He snuggles up next to his daughter on the screen. Fade to black, then Carter arrives with his daughter at a children's play park with swings and approaches a 30-something woman, Karen, and her young son, Sam.
Can you put your jacket on? Come on, Nia. No, oh, no. Come on,
Nia. No, no.
Come on.
You taking off, Karen?
Trying to.
Need a hand?
Would you mind?
Are you giving your mommy a hard time?
Huh? No.
You let Carter do it?
There you go. Amy? Did you say hi to Sam?
Hi, Sam. Hi, Amy.
Darn.
Something wrong?
No. Jenny was supposed to pick us up half an hour ago. She probably got delayed at the hospital again.
Can I drop you somewhere? I've got an extra seat in the back.
Oh, that'd be great.
Karen's car.
He is such an amazing kid. You've done a great job with him, Karen.
Please.
No, I mean it. Do you realize how important these early years are in Sam's development?
Are you kidding? I've read all the books. And of course I get all the expert advice I can handle from my mother-in-law.
I know what you mean. I've seen her in action. Oh, boy.
What, don't you have any know-it-all relatives?
Oh, listen, my father wrote the book on child development. Fortunately, it's in Norwegian.
Well, what does he have to say on the subject? Oh. In English, please.
What does he not have to say?
That bad, huh?
No, actually, he's one of the most visionary men in his field. He heads a child development clinic outside of Oslo. In fact, we're taking Amy over there next week.
Jenny never said anything to me about Amy going to a clinic in Norway.
You know, it would be a great opportunity for you and Sam.
Well, I think Sam's a little young for a trip to Norway.
Oh, I don't know about that. Big boy like Sam.
Well, what's so visionary about your dad's clinic anyway?
Well, first of all, it's in a beautiful, natural country setting. Amy will be supervised by a team of child psychologists who record her progress hourly. But the thing is, you can't study child development and think anyone is going to take it seriously if you only have one subject. It's just another case history. So what we're setting up is a control group of gifted children. We'll need at least five, none of them older than 3 years old. That's why I wanted to talk to you about Sam being
one of your guinea pigs? Oh, Carter, you gotta be kidding.
No.
Nobody's gonna let their kid go to some snake pit in Norway to be part of some developmental study.
It's not a snake pit. Do you think I'd let Amy have anything to do with this unless it was completely safe?
No. But I can't believe that Jenny's going along with this.
Let's just forget the whole subject.
Well, don't get mad, Carter. Bless you.
I'm not mad.
We're friends, remember? And as a friend, I'm telling you that the whole idea is crazy. I mean, how did you think that any sane parent would allow their kid to be part of something like that?
Karen, do you realize that no one really knows anything about personality development? Everything up to now has been pure conjecture. All we psychiatrists do is chase cows after the barn door has been opened. Achoo! Here for the first time, we'll have an opportunity to observe what happens, when it happens, and precisely monitor the psychological consequences.
Well, not with my kid, you know.
Are you all right?
God,
hang on,
eye.
I got the wheel.
Carter has sneezed some powder into Karen's eyes. He takes control of the car and slams on the brakes.
So sorry, Karen. Are you all right?
I've got something in my eye.
Oh, here.
Oh, it hurts.
Let me have a look. Look up. Now, look down. It's just the tiniest bit of dirt.
Oh, it hurts.
Here, just keep your eyes closed. I'll get you a tissue.
Are the kids okay?
Don't move. They're fine. They're fine.
He pours chloroform onto a tissue.
I'm so sorry.
What's that smell?
I'm sorry.
He holds the tissue over Karen's mouth. Out of the car's back window, over the two sleeping children's shoulders, Carter spots two male joggers coming over the brow of the hill. Worried, he looks at his stirring daughter, then back at the joggers. His gaze darts to the unconscious Karen, then back again at the looming joggers. Young Amy opens her eyes. Again, Carter looks at the joggers as they come ever closer. Carter lifts Karen's head and presses it back against the seat. He lets go and her head flops forward, hitting the horn. A frantic Carter looks at Amy, who rubs her eyes. The two joggers spot Carter and the others inside the car. Carter grimaces and closes his eyes. In slow motion, the joggers pass by and look into the car. Carter's eyes are glazed and he looks defeated. Carter's alter ego, Kane, is leaning into the car. Wearing a leather jacket, sunglasses and smoking, Kane speaks.
Kiss her.
What?
You've got about 5 seconds before those guys are in your face. And what do you think you look like, killer? Go on, kiss her!
Carter lifts back Karen's head and kisses her on the lips. The joggers smile as they see the kiss on their way past the car.
Ooh, well done.
The joggers resume their run. Amy slips back to sleep. Carter's expression is a mixture of relief and exasperation.
When did you get out?
Move over.
Kane climbs into the car, still smoking.
Isn't this pleasant? We're just gonna sit here all day?
What are you doing here?
I'm saving your ass, that's one. I was just supposed to come along as an observer. Right now, what I'm observing is very odd. Twin brothers chatting in the front seat of a car while the driver is slumped over the wheel. What is wrong with this picture?
I don't need you!
I don't need you! Let's get out of here, Carter, before we're seen. Because believe me, we'll be remembered.
Carter is driving.
You can drop me off in the next corner. I could use a drink.
And don't follow me anymore.
Don't follow me anymore.
Stop that.
Stop that.
Stop it!
All right.
Jesus.
Carter. You're a thankless dope. I was only trying to help, which of course I did. This thing you're doing means everything to the old man, and you can't fuck it up.
I'm not fucking anything up.
Oh, really? By the way, what were you planning on doing with the little missus here?
I'm gonna take her back to the park and leave her there.
Very good. I see you've got this all thought out. Take her back to the park and leave her there. Uh-huh. And then what?
And when the chloroform wears off, she'll be fine.
And when you get home, the cops will be sitting on your doorstep.
I won't hurt her!
You won't hurt her. She'll hurt you.
Oh, my God. What are we gonna do?
I'll tell you what we're gonna do.
What?
First stop off at your place. I need to get out of these clothes. And then you need to get lost.
And then what?
The cat's in the bag. And the bag is in the river.
Kane grabs Karen by her hair, lifts her head, then drops it back into his lap. Carter starts to cry. Now at home, Carter drives his car into his driveway and parks in his garage. The garage's automatic doors close behind him. He stuffs Karen into the car's boot and gently closes it. He lifts sleeping daughter Amy out of the car and carries her into the house, leaving the also sleeping youngster Sam in the car. Now in the young girl's bedroom, Carter carefully puts Amy onto her bed. Carter's wife, the pretty 30-something brunette Jenny, walks in.
Oh, I've been up all night with Mrs. Beller.
The radiation seems to be working.
Carter appears shocked to see his wife.
I am going to lie down for a bit before I take her for a checkup. Isn't she beautiful?
Jenny smiles. Carter turns to watch her walk away. She walks under an archway and into her bedroom. She is dressed in just a long brown jumper. Jenny climbs onto the bed, baring her bottom. She begins to read. Acting strangely, Carter is standing down the hall and looks deep in thought as he stares at his unaware wife. A maniacal smile breaks out on his face as he begins to walk down the hallway towards the bedroom. Suddenly, an innocent look now adorns his face as he brushes back his hair. Still unaware, Jenny continues reading, her white underwear is showing. Carter pulls his shirt out from his trousers, undoes his belt and climbs onto the bed. He reaches around to the front of his wife's body, rubs her bare leg, then puts his arm up her jumper, kissing her.
Oh, Dr. Nix. Oh, how hard we are. Ow, hurt me.
The smiling Carter pulls his left arm out from under his wife's jumper and holds her face before kissing her. The baby noise is not from Amy, who is fast asleep on the screen.
That's all right. I'll get her.
He kisses Jenny on the lips.
You just wait here.
Jenny smiles. Carter too is smiling, then the smile slips furtively from his face as he leaves. Carter switches off the CCTV screen on his way out of the room. He tucks his shirt back into his trousers and turns to watch his wife stretching, cat-like, on the bed. In the garage, a restless, crying Sam is still in Carter's car.
Mommy! 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 Mommy!
An angry Carter shakes his head and walks out. He drives his car into the car park of the Riviera motorhome, then lifts Sam out of the car. Two cleaners walk past, oblivious to proceedings.
Shut up! Stop that!
Carter carries Sam into one of the rooms. Inside this dimly lit room are Carter's alter ego, Kane, who is smoking and drinking whiskey, and a mysterious elderly gentleman also called Dr. Nix.
I was afraid of this. I wanted him to do this himself. I didn't want you to help him.
Gee, Daddy, I was only trying to help out. If I hadn't been there, we'd all be fucked. Carter's an amateur. He panicked.
Oh, stop it!
I know you, Kane. Carter weakened and you stepped in. We all know your tough guy act. But we don't need a loose cannon here. Carter can finish this himself. Let me tell you something, Doctor. I know Carter wants to help, but we're talking about stealing kids here and experimenting on them. You may need this loose cannon.
You should never have gotten out. You're nothing but a cheap hoodlum.
I am what you made me, Dad.
Shut up and finish your drink.
I already have.
Then let me get you another.
Dr. Nix stops folding clothes and takes Kane's glass.
You know, you could get us all put away for good.
There's no jail that can hold me. I'm the escape artist, remember? I learned it, breaking out of all those cages you locked me in.
They were not cages! They were especially designed infant environments.
They were cages!
Hush, hush now. You'll wake the child.
But hey, I'm not one to hold a grudge. After all, where would I be without you, Bonesy?
You wouldn't exist.
That's right, but I do exist, don't I? I'm that fucked up experiment of yours that just won't go away. Hickory dickory, Doc. Kane has picked his lock. I'm out of here. The cat's in the bag, and the bag is going in the river. So don't fuck with me, Dad. You may lose more than your license this time.
A groggy Kane slumps back into his chair. In spectacles and a bow tie, Dr. Nix leans towards Kane.
Have you talked to the others?
About what?
About what we're doing?
Are you kidding? If Margot finds out...
Kane drops his cigarette into his drink.
Hey, what did you put in this?
Just something to relax, you know.
Kane tries to lunge at Dr. Nix, but seems suddenly powerless and is now semi-conscious. Dr. Nix puts a silver gum into his jacket pocket and leans on the table next to Kane, staring at him.
I want you to sleep now, Kane.
Kane's eyes roll back in his head.
You've done a good job, but we don't need you anymore. I want you to relax and sleep. Carter can handle everything now.
A glamorous couple walk out of a furniture shop. Inside, Carter's wife Jenny walks past a heart-shaped CCTV screen. She spots herself on the screen, then sees a Valentine's Day sale sign. She turns and looks at the clocks as they all go off. She looks around the room, then walks towards a display of musical clocks. She lifts one and listens to the tune. It is a Tiffany & Co. clock. It reads 11 a.m. She smiles, admiring the clock. Carter arrives carrying Amy.
We don't pick them, sweetie. We just look at
them.
Can
I pick them?
She's a little restless, honey. I'm going to take her outside.
Oh, I'll take her.
No. You finish up. We'll be fine. We're going to go look at the flowers.
Carter leaves. Jenny continues to look longingly at the clock.
Would you like that gift wrap? Yes. Thank you. I'll be right back.
A man in a green jacket is tapping his keys on the desk, next to Jenny. Her gaze moves from the keys up to the 30-something's face.
That's what I would buy for the man in my life.
Jenny appears to be speechless. The handsome man Jack is smiling. Jenny smiles back.
How are you?
Fine. And you?
Smiling and lost for words, Jenny gently shakes, then nods her head.
After the funeral, I was a block of ice. I couldn't bear to feel, so I felt nothing. I'm sorry I made such a mess of it. I'm staying at the Garden Court. If you wanted to, just talk. I'll be there tonight. We could... I saw you come in with Carter and your little girl. I guess I just didn't thaw out fast enough.
A slightly tearful Jenny struggles for the right words. She goes to speak, but Jack leaves quickly in tears. Jenny is shocked. She sees that Jack has left his keys on the marble desk next to a small clock. She quickly grabs the keys and draws breath as a smiling Carter returns with Amy.
Thank you, sweetie.
Are you finished?
Yeah. I mean, no.
Honey, are you all right? You look upset.
No, I'm fine. I'm just not finished. Why don't you take Amy onto the park and I can catch up with you guys later?
No, I think it's gonna rain. We're gonna go on home. But don't be too long. Amy needs to spend more time with her mommy. More quality time.
I'll be home soon. We'll have plenty of time for quality time. Bye, sweetie.
Bye, mommy.
Jenny sighs a sigh of relief as Carter leaves. She lifts the small clock.
Miss?
Yes?
I'd like this one also, please.
Now outside, Jenny winds back the smaller clock, then puts it in its box. She chews on her pen. Then, smiling, she writes Jack's name on a small gift card. She places the card next to a wrapped present, which has a card with Carter written on it on top. Then Jenny is using a phone box in the rain.
Mr. Dante's room isn't answering. Would you like to leave a message?
Yes. Can you tell him that Jenny O'Keefe called and that I have his keys?
Okay.
And I can meet him at O'Keefe Park, Camino Park at 1. If he can meet me by the playground, that would be great.
Still smiling, Jenny is now driving. She pulls over onto a busy pavement outside a hotel. She parks and is now inside the hotel, climbing the cream stairs. Now in a corridor, she walks past a maid and a couple walking arm in arm. Stopping outside a room, Jenny turns and looks at the people she has passed. Smirking, she opens the room with Jack's keys. She scans the luxurious room and sees a large green plant, various chairs, and a freshly made bed. Jenny opens the top drawer of the bedside table, then reaches into a bag for the present. She stirs on hearing a noise from outside before putting the present in the drawer. She jumps at the noise and closes the drawer. She smiles, then leaves. The children's play park. A 30-something woman with short hair walks across the park and approaches a daydreaming Jenny.
Hi. Where's Amy?
Home. With Carter.
Oh, I must have missed them today. You know what a great guy you've got? The idea of taking a day off and spending it with Maxine hasn't even occurred to my husband. Is everything all right?
Yeah. No.
What's the matter?
Sarah, I saw Jack today.
Jesus.
I think he still loves me.
Oh, come on. Isn't it a little late for that?
He was so flustered he forgot his keys, so I'm meeting him here to return them.
You know, I hate to bring this up, but you are married to the perfect man.
The perfect man? Yesterday, out of the blue, he started to make love to me. And then stopped when Amy started to cry.
Well, just because he was worried about
Amy. He wasn't worried about Amy because he didn't even go to her room. He went downstairs, got into his car, and then drove off.
That doesn't make any sense.
Carter isn't making any sense. And he's becoming awfully compulsive with Amy. He doesn't just take care of her. He studies her.
I have this horrible feeling it has something to do with his father. Jenny, you're not just finding excuses to start up with Jack again.
I don't know.
Jenny spots Jack walking towards them in the park.
Boy, he looks great.
Yeah.
Definitely don't do what I want to do. Good luck.
Thanks.
Jenny walks towards Jack. She hands him the keys.
Thank you. Nothing's quite as stupid as making a dramatic exit and having to go back because you forgot your car keys. Fortunately, it was a rental. They sent over another set.
You're very good at dramatic exits.
I'm sorry, Jenny.
It's okay. I got over it. And I learned something.
What?
To be the dispassionate doctor.
Let's walk.
They walk together in the misty park and they pass down a path between two large stone urns. Jack reaches for Jenny's hand. She obliges. Jack takes off his green trench coat and hangs it on a tree. He takes Jenny's hand and starts to undress her. They are now locked in a passionate embrace on the leaves as one image softly dissolves into another. Carter is in the woods and lifts Jack's trench coat off the tree. Jenny wakes up, back at home in her own bed with a jump. She appears relieved, then somewhat disappointed. She brushes her hand through her curly brown hair. Then she turns to see Carter comforting Amy on the CCTV baby monitor.
It's okay, sweetie. It's all right, baby. Yeah.
Why couldn't we just have an intercom to listen to the baby instead of this TV thing?
Little love, hard to know a wound.
I don't know why I agreed to it. Taking a couple of years off from his practice to raise Amy personally. Testing out a few new approaches to child raising right here in his own home. Maybe even write a book about it. So I go to work, and the child psychologist stays at home playing house dad.
Jenny gets out of bed and opens a chest of drawers. She lifts out some red heart-shaped bunting. She then opens a Valentine's card from Amy to her dad. It reads, "Daddy, be my Valentine." Then Jenny lifts out a wrapped present. It has Jack's card attached to it.
Oh, no.
A surprised Jenny has a flashback. She is back in Jack's hotel room. She puts the present marked for Carter into the drawer. Jenny is now in her 4x4. She drives past a statue of a knight on horseback holding a long, sharp lance.
Jack's wife Emma was my patient, dying of lung cancer.
A hospital flashback.
It was agonizing for him, but he came every night to sit with her. My heart went out to him. I wanted so much to take away some of his pain.
Jenny puts her arm on Jack's shoulder. Jack's wife lies in the hospital bed.
Then I realized it was more than that. I was falling in love with him.
In slow motion, Jenny points out the television to Jack. On the TV, a caption reads, "New York. The time is heading towards midnight." At the stroke of midnight, people are celebrating on the screen. Jenny mouths Happy New Year. Jack closes his eyes and nods. Jenny kisses him on the cheek, then pulls away. Jack's eyes meet Jenny's. They kiss each other, then hug. Over Jack's shoulder, his wife stirs and is suddenly awake. Jack spots his waking wife in the TV's reflection. Jenny is oblivious. Jack quickly turns around to see his grey-faced wife staring straight at them.
What's going on?
Leave the room.
What?
Leave the room. You must leave the room.
Jenny checks Jack's wife for a pulse.
Code blue!
A stunned Jack backs slowly out of the room as the medics rush in.
Coming through. What do we got? We have a cardiac arrest.
What?
The bag. Okay, 1 milligram epinephrine.
Right.
Jenny and her team hurriedly attend to Jack's wife. The flashback ends. Jenny is back driving. She shakes her head, then pulls into Jack's hotel's driveway. Running up the stairs, she creeps down the corridor and listens at his door. She enters the dark room and sees Jack asleep on the bed. She takes a breath, then opens the drawer. Jack is still asleep. The drawer is empty, but for a Bible. Jack awakens suddenly and grabs Jenny, pulling her onto the bed.
What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Happy Valentine's Day.
This for me? Mm-hmm. You came back.
Well, I just came because I was...
Why did you run away?
Huh? I don't know. I thought I saw someone.
Where?
In the woods.
Well, he's not here now, is he? Is he?
Jack kisses Jenny on the lips, then the neck.
Oh. There was someone.
A flashback to their romp in the woods. Carter lifts Jack's trench coat from the tree. Thinking he's been seen, he escapes. A shocked-looking Jenny sits upright on the woodland floor. Suddenly, she is back in Jack's bed. Confused, Jenny realises it was a flashback. She looks at the time. The sleeping Jack rests his head on her legs.
Oh. God.
Jenny is now driving.
Sarah, it's Jenny.
Jenny, my God, are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
I've been worried to death. Carter's been calling all night.
Oh, no.
What happened to you?
I was with Jack.
At his hotel all night?
Look, I can't explain right now. What did Carter say?
Well, since you didn't come home and no one knew where you were, he figured you had an accident. He called all the hospitals and the police. He's got the whole world looking for you. What are you going to tell him?
Some cyclists suddenly appear in front of Jenny's 4x4. She swerves and misses them, but heads straight for the stone statue of the knight with a sharp lance. The lance pierces the windscreen and plunges deep into her chest. Jenny wakes up with a start.
Honey, it's okay. I'm right here. Are you all right?
Yeah. Oh, I had the worst dream.
I'll say. You were moaning and waving your hands around.
I dreamt I was in the weirdest car accident.
Well, you're okay now. Why don't I get you a glass of water?
Okay. sweet.
Carter leaves his wife in bed.
I've been so worried about you, honey. I think you've been working too hard. You shouldn't have to carry the whole load. It's beginning to take a toll on you.
Jenny takes out Carter's present.
I don't know. Maybe we should be rethinking this whole parenting arrangement. I just don't think it's been fair to you. And anyway, one of these days I'm going to have to get back to my own practice. You know?
She returns the present to the drawer and goes back to bed.
Maybe we could get a sitter in. During the day.
Carter returns to the bedroom with Jenny's drink and carrying a pillow. He sits next to her on the bed.
I should go back to work. What do you think?
I think...
Carter smothers Jenny with the pillow. She punches and grabs at him, then her arms fall away. An evil smile appears on Carter's face. His eyes are then glazed. A flashback to the woods. Jack and Jenny walk together towards the trees. Carter watches the two of them from his car, a pained expression on his face. A young woman, Nan, arrives carrying a baby.
Dr. Nix.
Oh, hi, Nan.
Can you do me a big favor?
Yeah, of course.
My dipshit boyfriend forgot to pick me up. Can you drop me off at Mrs. Roberts?
Sure, I just have to pick something up first. Can you keep an eye on Amy for me?
Yeah, no problem.
I'll be right back.
Carter gets out of the car, leaving a sleeping Amy in the back. He creeps out from behind a tree to see his wife and Jack in their passionate woodland embrace. Heartbroken, Carter's eyes begin to glaze over and his alter ego, Kane, appears next to him wearing sunglasses.
Jesus. Come on. Be a peeping Tom on your own time. We're gonna lose that kid. That's my wife. Oh. No shit.
Kane turns to watch.
I married her too soon. She never got over him. No question of that.
Look, Carter, why don't you just go home? I'll handle the babysitter.
I guess you're right. I don't feel very well. I better just go home and sleep.
That's right. You go sleep. I'll take care of everything. I'll just be you for a while, huh? Until this whole mess is cleaned up.
Kane takes off his sunglasses. A tearful Carter nods. Carter disappears from behind the tree and Kane appears smirking.
Poor schmuck.
Kane purses his lips as he watches Jack and Jenny. He laughs, then sees Jack's green trench coat hanging on the tree. He lifts the coat and hears Jack's keys jangle in the pocket. Putting on a pair of black gloves, Kane lifts a bunch of car rental and hotel room keys out of the trench coat. An idea seemingly springs into Kane's mind. Now wearing Jack's long green trench coat, Kane approaches Nan, who's holding a baby outside a toilet block.
Where'd you get that neat trench coat?
I copped it.
Chewing gum, Nan smiles.
You know, Dr. Nix, I should be going out with older guys. Tell you something. For a man your age, you're still pretty cute.
Kane's eyes scan the car park.
It's not the mileage, honey. It's the make.
Keep an eye on the monster. I gotta go pee. I'll be right back.
Nan hands Kane the baby and her cigarette. Kane looks at the baby and smiles. He puts her cigarette in his mouth and walks off. Kane then puts the baby into his car next to still sleeping daughter Amy. Kane looks around, opens the boot of Jack's car, looks inside, then immediately drops it down. He opens a flick knife on the set of keys and laughs to himself. He turns to see a blonde, curly-haired little boy walk out of the toilets. The little boy speaks.
I know what you're going to do. It's a bad thing, and I'm going to tell.
Kane glares at the boy.
Get out of here!
The boy runs off. Kane worriedly scans a car park before throwing the cigarette away. Holding the knife in his gloves, he walks towards the women's toilets. The small, sharp knife. Nan's bloody body is now in Jack's boot. Kane closes the lid. A scrap of Nan's blood-soaked scarf is sticking out of the boot. Kane pulls it out further, then spots that he has blood on either cuff of the jacket. Kane then casually strolls off. He has now returned Jack's coat to the branch in the woods. Jenny sees something in the woods and gets up. Kane runs off.
Jenny.
Back with Carter in the bedroom, he relinquishes his grip on the pillow and pulls the bedsheet off the still Jenny. He throws her onto the back seat of his car and starts the engine. In the dark, he is now pushing the car into a lily pad strewn marsh. He turns around to check that he hasn't been seen and puts a cigarette in his mouth. The car begins to sink. Taking a puff, he realizes the car has stopped sinking. Jenny's body is floating inside the car. The sun is starting to rise from behind clouds in the sky. A worried Carter's gaze flicks between the sun and Jenny. It is getting lighter as the sun quickly rises. Jenny's body is still in the car. Up and is struggling to free herself from the car.
Carter
looks confused. The car again begins to sink. Jenny helplessly punches at the windscreen as the car sinks out of sight. Carter smirks at the sinking car, then takes another drag of the cigarette. He walks away with the vast marsh in the background. Back in Jack's bedroom, he wakes from sleep on the bed. He presses the button on his bedside alarm. He looks confused as to why the musical alarm is still playing. He smiles as he realizes the noise is coming from his bedside table. He opens the drawer and lifts out the wrapped present. He then reads the card.
Jenny.
Shaking his head, he unwraps and takes out the clock. Jenny's card reads, "Dear Jack, I was so shocked to see you I didn't know what to say. Maybe I can find the words today. I'll be in Camino Park at 2. Jenny." Carter is in a police station.
"We were all going to the beach today to have a Valentine's Day picnic. Jenny took Amy to the park while I packed up the Jeep. I guess that was at about 8. They were supposed to be back at 10. Mm-hmm. Now, my wife is never late. I was immediately concerned. So I went to the park to search for them at about 10:30, but they weren't there. So I called up you fellows and came right over here."
"Dr. Nix, I'm sorry to say we've had a few other disappearances from this park. And judging from your description, your wife and daughter were likely candidates."
"You mean they might have been kidnapped?"
"We don't know. All we know now is that they've disappeared. Now, you told us you went there fairly regularly with your little girl."
"That's right."
"Did you ever notice anybody that didn't look right? Another man or woman that seemed to be hanging around?"
"No. Wait a minute. There was somebody. A man. I remember because I noticed that he didn't seem to have a child with him. Why would you come to a playground without a child?"
"Before you run through the mugshots, why don't you sit down with our sketch artist? It sure be helpful to get a picture of this guy out on the wire."
"Of course."
"Peters, it's Callie. I want you to do a sketch for me."
"Yeah, right away. I'll send him over."
Carter slyly smiles.
"See that guy over there? That's Jay Peters. He's our sketch man. Why don't you go over there and see what you guys can come up with?"
"All right.
Come on.
And, thanks for all your help."
Lieutenant Terry walks Carter to the sketching office.
"Dr. Nix, Jay Peters.
How you doing? Why don't you have a seat?
Just do the best you can."
"You got it."
Terry returns to the office where Sergeant Sean Cully is standing. An older man, Mac, walks in. Terry speaks.
"Poor guy.
This is getting out of hand, Sean."
"Yep.
It seems like a serial to me.
Detective's dream, the motiveless murder. What do we got now? Two moms, a babysitter, and all their kids are gone.
From the same playground."
"Right.
And there's Dr. Nix."
"What do you mean?"
"Nix. It's the kind of name that sticks in your head."
"From where?"
"From ancient history."
"Oh, your specialty. Let's go home, Mac. It's time
to Sean,
go
come
home.
On. Jeez,
go
I wouldn't...
Go home.
You know I wouldn't
Mac,
waste your time.
When you retire, you go home. You don't come to the office anymore. Just go home, sit in your favorite chair, watch the Shopping Channel, go wash your car, take your grandkids to the zoo, maybe even go see a ball game. What you don't do is hang around here looking over our shoulders like some goddamn Monday morning quarterback."
"I'm just trying to help you out."
"You're not helping out. You're in the way."
"Yeah? Well, maybe you can tell me who this Dr. Nix is."
"It's that guy over there working with Peters."
"Yeah, any dope can see that. But I worked another Nix case 20 years ago.
20 years ago? What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about that guy's old man."
"Are you sure?"
"Same name, same face."
"So what did your Dr. Nix do?"
"We got an anonymous tip he was buying babies. I remember we caught him with 5.
"5? Was he starting a basketball team?"
"Who knows?"
"So what happened to him?"
"After he got convicted, he jumped bail and left the country. He was Swedish or something. We couldn't extradite him."
"Great. Thanks for sharing,
Matt." "Just wait a minute here. At his trial, an associate testified against him, a Dr. Lynn Waldheim. Still works around here. I just called Waldheim's office. They tell me the doctor checked into the hospital."
"What's the matter with him?"
"It's a her. Cancer. I told her about the kids disappearing and one of their fathers was a Dr. Nix. She says she'll be right over."
"So this is retirement. I think I'll just have a heart attack right here."
"I could never retire, so I don't. You don't mind, do you guys?"
"Back. Consider yourself back on my task force."
"Thanks, Terry." "Hey. Hey, Sean."
The two policemen watch Carter construct a photo fit that resembles Jack. Terry speaks.
"I know what you guys are thinking.
Like father, like son.
Slam dunk, right? It's too easy.
Just because his father's a nut doesn't mean Carter has to be. I'm going with what we got. Two mothers, a babysitter, and their kids disappear from the same playground. As soon as Peters has finished with that sketch, I want it over there, shown to everybody that's been there in the last month. Yeah. When? We'll be right down. Car popped up out of Half Moon Marsh. Had a woman's body in it. They just brought it in downstairs. Oh, God.
Do we bring him?
Let's see how bad she is.
The three men approach Carter.
How's it going?
He's doing very well.
It's amazing. It looks just like him. And I think he was wearing a trench coat.
My God. Man?
Let me know as soon as you're finished. Let's go.
Detective Terry.
Yeah.
This is Dr. Waldheim.
Oh, thanks for coming over.
It's uncanny. He looks exactly like his father.
It's Carter Nix.
It couldn't be anyone else. And his wife and child have disappeared.
It gets worse.
We got a dead woman downstairs that could be his wife.
Oh, so much tragedy in one family.
Could you walk with us?
Certainly.
Are you feeling up to this?
I hate this wig. I told them to get me a gray one. My hair is gray. They couldn't find one. I look like a transvestite.
Looks fine.
You're very kind, but you don't lie very well.
So you were trained by Dr. Nix?
I took my residency with him.
Why him?
Because he was the best. I was especially interested in his work on multiple personalities. We wrote a book together based on one of his patients. In the book, we called him Cain.
Three faces of Cain or something?
He had many more faces than that, detective.
Down here. So what was the book called?
Raising Cain, The Creation and Evolution of the Multiple Personality. It was a bestseller. They even made a TV movie out of it. I heard he made quite a lot of money. I wouldn't have any of it. I had my name removed from the book.
Why?
I didn't want any part of that kind of money.
What kind of money was that?
Money profited off the misfortune of another.
But you still wrote the book.
That's right. I didn't know all the circumstances surrounding the case when I started.
And what with it? This way?
Yes. Let me explain. All multiple personality patients, regardless of the differences in their background, seem to share certain childhood traumas. When these occur, the original personality splinters into others. For instance, if a boy is molested by his mother or abused by his father, the original...
Dr. Waldheim walks the wrong way. They grab her.
The original personality forgets it ever happened. How could his loving parent do such a terrible thing? And he creates an alternate personality. This becomes the person it happened to. He is the one who suffers the pain for all the rest.
Built-in fall guy. You do something bad, the other personality takes a rap. Sounds very convenient. Straight ahead.
It is not a psychological state one wishes to acquire. Every time there is another trauma, there may be another personality. Pretty soon there are scores of them running around inside your head, squabbling amongst themselves as to which one gets to control the consciousness. Only one personality can control the consciousness at one time.
So now they're talking to each other.
Sounds like one messed up gang.
Yes. But by carefully observing and documenting the formation and development of Cain's multiples, Dr. Nix was creating a whole new theory of personality evolvement. Yeah. There was only one problem.
Only one? What was that?
The raw data.
Raw data. Elevator.
The raw data was extraordinarily detailed. It was as if he had gotten into a time machine and gone back to witness each one of Cain's personality-splitting traumas as it occurred. I was never allowed to meet Cain. His true identity was known only to Dr. Nix. All the information I had, I transcribed from tapes recorded during their sessions.
So, how do you think he got the information?
I never knew for sure. But years later, when he got arrested for trying to buy babies, I suspected there could only be one answer.
Yeah?
He had created Cain's multiple personalities in order to study them. He had taken some innocent child and split its personality. Now he needed a control group to test his theories. That's what he was buying the babies for.
The two cops and Dr. Waldheim enter the morgue. Terry speaks.
To the right. And you testified against him at his trial.
Oh, a man like that should be in jail.
What happened to Kane?
Only Dr. Nix knew that.
What's the story, Al?
Well, looks like she was put in the car when she was still alive and then drowned. Look at her nails. See how they're cut and torn? Looks like she was trying to claw her way out. You should see the expression on her face.
He pulls back the sheet to reveal a gruesome, bloodied woman whose eyes and mouth are wide open. Back in the park, a group of people carry the photo fit Carter created.
Excuse me, Lieutenant.
Yeah.
I think we got lucky. Ladies picked out the guy on the bench over there. He's real close.
Lieutenant Terry spots the suspect. It is Jack. He is holding some roses and wearing his green trench coat.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. I'm Lieutenant Terry, Bayview Police. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Jack sees the photo fit and looks shocked.
That's just a short ride and a couple of questions, okay? You'll help us out a lot.
Short ride? I could help you out here. I could talk.
Do you have a car here in the lot?
Yes, I have. It's my car right there.
This is your car?
I mean, it's a rental car.
Could you give the keys to Detective Carlton, please?
I rented
it. You ride
it.
With us.
I don't understand what... Sure, you have the keys. You have the keys. I just rented it yesterday. I'm visiting, Here, these are,
What is this?
What are you...
Huh? What is this?
I must have rubbed...
Huh?
This looks
I've
like blood. I've never seen
that. Blood. Did you open this?
Yeah, sure. Throw the round key. I don't know what you expect to find. I'm not hiding anything. Weapons or something. Oh, my God.
Nan's dead body is in the boot, her face in close-up. Then back at Carter's house.
Hello?
Carter?
Yes, sir.
Turn on channel 6.
It's going to mean light rain, and then yet...
A Baylin Park man was indicted this afternoon on charges he killed an 18-year-old babysitter.
You're a good boy,
the baby
Carter.
That was with the sitter.
Thank you,
is
sir.
Missing.
Now, meet me at the hotel at 4 a.m. downstairs.
Yes, sir, I'll be there.
The children must be moved tonight. Goodbye now.
Bye-bye, Boomsy.
The charges against Jack Dante, 35, include first-degree murder and kidnapping. He is also being questioned about the disappearance of Sam Bowman, age 4, of Bayview. The body of his mother, Karen Bowman, was recovered early this morning by police from the trunk of her car in Half Moon Marsh.
Carter switches the TV back to the CCTV of Amy's bedroom. A soaked, glaring Jenny appears on screen, then disappears. Carter is in shock. He looks down the empty hallway and at the now empty bedroom on the screen. He puts his hand over his mouth in shock, then stands and angrily throws his cigarette at the wall. He reaches for a gold candlestick and walks down the corridor with a steely-eyed expression on his face. He looks at the CCTV camera and the empty bed. He spots a pair of white shoes sticking out of the shadows. Armed with the candlestick, he reaches slowly towards the light switch. The shoes are empty. A knife appears suddenly and slices Carter's wrist, drawing blood. Jenny punches him in the stomach, then holds a knife to his throat. She is now on top of him.
Wake up! Don't move or I'll cut it.
Jenny, what are you doing? I'm bleeding. Oh my God, I'm bleeding.
And I can help you.
Don't let me die, Jenny.
I want to know what you've done with Amy.
Amy, what are you saying?
I want answers, Carter.
Jenny.
How could you let me drown like that?
I'm drowned. What's happened?
Was it because of Jack?
Jack.
You saw us in the park together, didn't you?
Yes.
And you got him arrested for what you did.
Help me, Jenny.
Then tell me where Amy is.
But I don't know where she is. What are you saying?
She wants to know where her brat is. So why don't you tell her before you get your throat cut?
But I don't know where she is.
I don't know where she is.
I don't.
Who are you talking to?
I do.
Where?
I took her to dear old dad.
Where is he?
Who are you talking to?
Jenny turns. There is no one there.
Where's Amy? Where have you taken her?
Taken her? Taken her where?
She's with my father.
Your father? What are you saying? Your father is dead!
No, no, he's not dead. He's here. Amy's with him. She's fine. Tell her, Kane. Tell her.
Dr. O'Kane.
She's fine. Why won't you tell her?
Please.
Go on, tell her.
Carter, get up. Carter, get up.
Tell her, Kane. Tell her.
You all right?
Tell her Amy's fine. Why won't you tell her?
Dr. O'Kane.
You got to tell her.
Tell her.
Jenny and Jack are at the police station. Cully speaks.
According to Norwegian authorities, Dr. Nix took a swan dive into a fjord 18 years ago. There was a suicide note, but they never recovered the body.
Great. Carter says they're with his father. His father's been dead for 18 years. This gets better all the time. Let's hope Waldheim can get something out of this psycho.
Dr. Waldheim is speaking to Carter in another room.
Excuse me, here's your copy, Dr. Waldheim. When I got myself out of the car, I could only think of one thing. If he was crazy enough to kill me, what was he gonna do to Amy? So then I went home. But she wasn't there. That's when I called you. And then Carter came home. I just wanted him to tell me where Amy was.
Jack comforts Jenny. Terry speaks.
Well, let's hope he's not too nuts.
What do you mean?
Too nuts to go to jail.
You mean he might not go to jail?
First, we gotta find out if he's competent to stand trial. And even if he is, any smart lawyer will plead him not guilty by reason of insanity. And depending on what Waldheim finds out, Carter could wind up a celebrity mental case in some cushy institution.
Well, he might be out someday.
All he's got to do is get better.
Dr. Waldheim enters, shaking her head.
Fascinating. It's quite something after writing about him for years to finally meet him.
Carter is Kane.
And Josh and Margot and God knows who else. Now it is clear to me how Dr. Nix got all his precise data. He traumatized his own son. Then over the years, he observed the effects.
Jenny shakes her head.
Does Carter know what he did?
Carter didn't do anything. Kane did all the killing.
Who is Kane?
One of Carter's multiples. One of the ones Dr. Nix created when he abused him as a child. When something bad is about to happen to Carter, or when something bad has to be done, Carter blacks out and Kane takes over. After the unpleasantness, Kane exits and Carter wakes up. He has lost some time. He doesn't remember how he got where he is or what happened while he was asleep. He may be confused, but his conscience is clean.
Jenny and Jack both shake their heads.
So how do we find the children?
Carter doesn't know where they are, but one of the other multiples may.
And how do we talk to them?
Hypnotism is the fastest, though not always the most prudent method.
Well, we gotta find these babies now.
Then I will need an absolutely quiet space where I can be alone with Carter.
Whatever you need, and do it fast. I don't want to be walking behind any little coffins.
All right.
Jack kisses Jenny. Carter is crying. Kane appears behind him smoking.
She doesn't care who she fucks or where she does it. But don't worry, buddy. I'm not gonna let that loving wife of yours sell you down the river. Once we get out of here, I'm gonna put that two-timing bitch in a box she'll never swim out of.
Carter looks terrified.
Hey, you remember that lady cop with a rat's nest for a hairdo that brought Waldheimer coffee?
Carter nods.
Take a look down at your feet. Don't be so obvious! Jesus. Keep your head up. Now reach down. And
Down.
Carter picks up the hairpin.
Down. And pick it up. Good boy.
Now Carter's with Dr. Waldheim.
Carter, you're awake now. I am a doctor and I'm here to help you. Do you understand? Carter?
He rubs his eyes and looks confused.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you. Carter, pay attention. You have to answer my questions so I will be able to understand what is going on. Is that perfectly clear?
No.
Why?
Because I'm not Carter.
You're not Carter?
No.
Well, wait a minute. If you're not Carter, then who are you?
I'm Josh.
Josh. And where is Carter?
Carter's inside.
Inside where?
He taps his temple.
Can you wake him up so I can talk to him?
No.
Why?
Bumsy would hurt me.
Who is Bumsy?
Bumsy's my dad.
But your father isn't here anymore. He is dead.
No, no. He's here. I gotta go.
Your father isn't here now, Josh, so you don't have to be afraid.
He'll hurt me.
No, he can't hurt you now. I won't let him.
You won't?
No.
You promise?
Yes, I promise.
Okay.
How old are you, Josh?
7 and a half.
Why are you the one who came to talk to me?
I don't know.
Why are you here?
I don't know.
Well, try to think. What is the last thing that you remember?
I was in a playground.
A playground? And what happened?
A flashback.
Get out of here!
I saw Kane. He was going to do something bad. Something I'd be blamed for. I told him it was bad. Then I woke up Margo and I told her. She got real mad. She told me to go to sleep. Then I woke up here.
Alter ego Josh looks at his bandaged wrist.
My arm hurts. That's why I'm here.
Could you explain that?
That's what Margo says.
Margo.
That's what she says. Hickory dickory dock. Kane has picked his lock. He did a bad deed and Josh comes to bleed. Hickory dickory dock.
Josh, everything is all right. Everything is all right. Do you know where the babies are?
What babies?
Someone took the babies and hid them. Now nobody is going to get punished for this. I just want to know where they are.
Oh no, he did it again! It was Bumsy! He did it again! Oh no.
What's the matter?
She heard me.
Who heard you?
Margo. She's right behind you. Don't look. I shouldn't be talking to you.
How do you know she heard you?
She's staring right at me. Like I did something bad.
Who is Margo?
She protects the children. She won't let Bumsy hurt them like he hurt me. When he tried to take the children before, she called up the police and they stopped him.
She called the police?
Yes. But you said that he did it again.
Yes.
Oh, boy. She won't just call the police this time.
What is she going to do?
I don't know. I gotta get out of here. Where is she?
Josh looks over his right shoulder and is deeply shocked. His eyes roll back in his head and it hits the table.
Carter. Carter. Josh. Josh, I want to talk to you. When I snap my fingers, you are going to wake up.
Josh? Is this Margot?
Now in control, alter ego Margot smiles.
Do you know where the children are?
A smiling Margot nods.
Where?
Margot sits up straight and beckons Dr. Waldheim closer with her finger. The elderly doctor leans forward, then Margot headbutts her, knocking her out. Margot collapses back into the chair, eyes roll back into her head. Suddenly, another alter ego snaps into control of Carter's body. Waldheim is unconscious in the chair. This alter ego looks around and sees a sleeping cop. He reaches the hairpin out of his pocket and creeps towards the door. He kneels, then opens the door with the hairpin and smirks. Sergeant Cully is asleep. His watch reads 3:44. Jack is also asleep. A no smoking poster on the wall. A cloud of cigarette smoke on a balcony. Jenny is smoking and is deep in thought. She looks down and sees someone walk out of the station.
Dr. Waldheim? Dr. Waldheim? Dr. Waldheim! Did he tell you where Amy is?
The silhouetted figure walks off. Jenny takes the lift, then runs towards a departing taxi. Jenny gets into her 4x4. Back in the morgue, a policeman's body lies prostrate. Carter's clothes are scattered across the room. Dr. Waldheim is face down on the floor in her slip. She reaches at her sore neck, then realizes that her wig is gone.
My God, my God. Help! Help!
Jenny drives after the taxi and follows it into the Riviera Motor Lodge. In the car park, the taxi nearly hits a truck carrying a large sundial with a spiked arrow sticking out of the back. Jenny then arrives and parks. The person gets out of the taxi.
Move the truck over there out of the people's way.
Jenny phones the police as the person steals a shopping bag out of one of the cars and walks off.
car to knock that Waldheim and escape. Let's go. Yeah.
It's Jenny O'Keefe.
Where are you?
I'm at the Riviera Motel at Camino on 3rd. I followed Waldheim here.
That's not Waldheim.
Just stay put. Stay put. We'll be right over.
I gotta go.
Jesus, Manuel, stop! You're gonna kill somebody at that sundial!
Calm down, senor!
The truck reverses towards Jenny's 4x4. Jenny exits her 4x4. She looks up at the lightning in the sky and sees two men with beers above her. Again, the truck reverses. Jenny gets into the lift. A flash of someone else in the lift. Jenny then turns to see an oblivious Carter in Dr. Waldheim's wig and jacket. He is holding the shopping bag over his face. She looks down to see his bare feet. Jenny quietly reaches into her brown leather satchel and takes out a small knife. As the lift door opens, Jenny looks at the unknowing Carter. Dr. Nix with Amy.
Oh my god.
So,
Mommy.
This is my daughter-in-law. My god, what kind of a mother are you? Put that knife down and come out of there.
Give me my child!
I have a gun. It's pointed at your heart. Now, if you have anything to say to me, say it gently. I don't want you upsetting the child. You're her mother. You're scared and angry. And if looks could kill, my dear, I would be dead.
Dr. Nix holds Amy.
You are my mommy.
It's okay, honey. I'm here now, and we're gonna go home.
Now. Drop the knife and come out of there.
Jenny drops the knife in the lift. Dr. Nix walks backwards, dragging a pram.
Why are you doing this?
I don't have time to explain. Carter's waiting for me downstairs.
Carter is in there.
You're a poor liar, my dear. Carter always does as he's told. He's a good boy. Once we're all safely away, he'll be yours again. But you might have to share him with the law. Someone will have to pay for all these terrible crimes.
You did this.
I did nothing. I don't even exist.
Carter now has the knife and the pram.
Now say goodbye to Amy. And don't upset her.
Can I kiss her?
No, stay where you are. Don't force me to kill you here. It would be very harmful to the child.
Nix turns to see lift close with the pram now inside.
Damn you! Look what you've done!
Nix tries to call the lift. The two men with beers are shouting from across the balcony. Dr. Nix spots the stairs and points his gun at Jenny.
Back up! Back up! Now! Back up!
On the floor below, Carter pushes the pram to safety out of the lift. The truck again reverses in the car park as the police arrive.
She's not there. Let's go around front. Stay in the car!
Worried Jack remains in the car. He stirs at the lightning. The truck continues to jolt back and forth. Jack sees a man lifting a baby safely out of the pram. Then, on the level above, he watches Dr. Nix creep towards Jenny. Jack exits the car. On the balcony, the two Larry men with beers walk closer to Dr. Nix. Jenny reaches out for the crying Amy. Dr. Nix looks angry. Carter creeps towards him in the background. Jenny and Amy's fingers almost meet. Nick spies the stairs. Carter edges closer with the knife. The policemen rescue the young boy and the baby in the pram below. Dropping his bag, Carter stabs Dr. Nix in the shoulder. In slow motion, the stunned Dr. Nix spins around and drops Amy off the balcony. Jenny is aghast. Policeman Terry spots Jack running to catch the falling girl. Terry fails to catch Amy as she falls. Jack is unknowingly running towards the sharp arrow of the sundial on the truck. Jack runs closer to the sundial. Jenny is screaming. The bullet hits the point of the arrow, breaking it off, thus unwittingly saving Jack. Jack catches Amy. Jenny smiles from the balcony as the dying Dr. Nix lies next to her. Jack and Amy look up at the smiling Jenny. On the level below, Lieutenant Terry waves a woman back inside, then points his gun upwards. Grabbing his moment, Carter, still dressed as a woman, walks out of the lift and calmly escapes the scene in his bare feet. A policeman clutches the young boy. Fade to black, then the children's play park. Jenny and Amy with her friend and her daughter.
We all thought Carter was imagining his dead father, but he wasn't. Dr. Nix faked his suicide so that he could kidnap the children and not have the problem of the police tracking him down.
Well, what about tracking down his son?
Once Carter helped him get the kids, he was disposable. Dr. Nix planned to disappear and leave Carter for the police.
Did they find him yet?
Mm-mm.
You think he'll come back?
I don't know. I hope so. He needs help.
He needs to be locked up.
He needs to be in a hospital.
What are you doing, running for sainthood? He tried to kill you.
I know.
Well, just in case he shows up, I'd be packing a .45.
Well, Jack's staying with me now, so...
Better than a .45. How's it going?
Good. He's been very supportive. And Amy likes him. Did you see the new bunny he brought her? Amy!
Amy runs off into the woods.
Amy? I'll be right back. Amy!
Jenny is now in the woods carrying Amy's toy rabbit. Jenny stands on the path where she and Jack walk together. Amy is in the distance.
Amy? Amy?
She sees Amy below. Amy walks towards her smiling mother.
Where's Daddy?
Daddy's not here, sweetie. He's gone away.
Daddy's here.
No, he's not. Come on, honey. We've got to get back. Come to Mommy.
Dressed as a woman in a red dress, an eerie Carter looms behind the oblivious smiling Jenny and Amy. The end.